Who the Wild Things Are with Ryan McGuire.
You gotta listen to your body.
Oh my God, maybe, you know, I could get out there. I could do this.
Let's take a ride. Find your wild side. Real stories. See with your own eyes.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna have the best time out here.
Yeah, I was in tears. I was just like, that's the best, man.
Welcome back to Who the Wild Things Are. My name is Ryan McGuire, and I'm here to bring you conversations with the most wild folks on the planet. If you're enjoying the podcast, please leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you enjoyed the episode, share it with a friend. Appreciate you guys. Let's get it going.
I got a lot of these. I'll let you take one home. I'll change your mind.
But I'm only allowed to sharpen it with a knife.
Yeah, it's got to be a huge knife. It's got to be like a 13-inch Jackhawk 9000.
I don't have one of those.
It's okay. We'll send you home. We'll get you set up.
Okay.
All right. Sweet. We're live. BJ, thanks for coming.
Yeah, dude.
Thanks for making the trip down. Excited to dive into some of this. Obviously, we spent like the last 2 weeks together, but I don't really know that much about your background. So I want to start a little bit about, like, how did you become OCR world champ? The obstacle menace that you are today, where did all that kind of start out? So take me back to kind of like the beginning of your running career.
So I was born in Southern California, Glendora, California, actually, in 1998, 12/01, October 9th.
So what, you're 25?
I'm 25.
Yeah. Yes, Lauren was asking yesterday, I said that you were 25, and she's like, no way he's 25.
Like, she thought I was way older.
Yeah, so she thought you were a grown man.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, no. So, yeah, 25, it feels like 30, I guess, but I also feel 19 at the same time. Like, endurance training makes your body feel like you're 30, but mentally, like, I'm still 19. I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. Apparently you're not supposed to feel old until you're like 30. Or not maybe old, but just like an adult. Like, I don't feel like an adult.
Right.
So it's weird to be like doing adult things because I don't feel like I'm supposed to be there yet. Anyway, Southern California, born in 1998. Just had an active childhood, doing lots of stuff, being on my feet. Started racing bicycles when I was 4 years old. And that just kind of came my thing. Like, I raced BMX for a lot of years. And that was kind of my main love. That's what I focused on. Kind of had aspirations to go pro, but it was just kind of like my thing that I did as a kid. And my dad got me into that. So raced bicycles for like a decade. And then turned out I had a little bit of a knack for endurance. So we did some mountain bike racing, got into cross country and track in high school. And that seemed to be something I was really good at. I kind of excelled immediately and started breaking records at my first high school and was like, okay, maybe this is something we should take seriously. But kind of being a jack of all trades athlete, like, I could do almost any event in track and field in high school and qualify for the state championships. But I would never win the state championships in any of those events.
Mm.
So in high school, that kind of led me towards, like, if I'm going to go to college and I'm going to take sporting seriously, I have to do decathlon because that's the only thing that requires so many different skill sets, and that's just kind of what I had. So it was that, or I had this opportunity to start doing these obstacle course races in high school. So starting like my junior year, started running around in the mud and doing these local races in Southern California, started winning a lot. But these were like non-competitive, like your Valentine's Day mud run type things, and Rugged Maniacs, rest in peace. So I did those sorts of things. I actually did a Warrior Dash early on, 2014, and qualified for the Warrior Dash World Championships, which is like which was a big deal because they had like a huge prize purse, like 30 grand to win or something.
Wow.
And at 14, I'm like, I'm going to win this, dude. I felt confident, but everyone showed up, like Hunter, Hobie, all those big names were there. And I was nowhere near. I finished like 11th or something, which was good, you know, as at whatever age I was in 2014, I guess 15. Math. So yeah, did a couple of those, and then finally started trying some Spartan races. Won my first one when I was 16, still running cross country in high school as my senior year. And when I turned 18, I got an offer I was starting to like enroll in community college and kind of play that game. Didn't have great grades, so yeah, that was my route. But I got a call from Robert Coble, who ran the Spartan Pro team at the time, and I got an offer to get paid to travel around and run in the mud. And I was like, I jumped on it. That's what I'm going to do.
Sick.
So that was 2017. Roll a few more years, start finding my stride in 2019. 2020 comes around, you know, everyone breaks a little bit. But then when 2021 hit, everyone was really excited. I was excited. And that's when I was able to get my first world championship. And we just kind of like, we kind of reached the pinnacle. So from like 2016, doing my first races, building up to 2021. And now we've kind of stayed there at the top of the sport, been able to compete, which has been pretty cool. So that's like a very Cliff Notes version of my career.
Yeah, that paints a good picture. I think one question I have immediately is like, how did you get involved in the first one? How did, like, who convinced you to go to this first event?
So I was actually supposed to do a Rugged Maniac with my dad, and my coach found out, and he was like, no, you're not gonna do that. So I told my dad, no, I can't do this. And my coach won't let me. He doesn't want me to do outside events because I could get hurt. This was when I was at my first high school and we had really, really good coaching. And I was like going places with my running. I was actually on a really good trajectory. Colleges were already reaching out to me and I was only a sophomore. So I was like, this is good. And then I went to a new school district, moved away just for like better family situation. But the school got really bad and the coaching got worse. And I didn't know how to like coach myself to be a good athlete, so I never improved after my sophomore year. I just kind of plateaued and I kind of sat at that same level. Unfortunate, but then running wasn't as serious there, so I let myself do that other race. We signed up for, it was called the Love Mud Run, the Valentine's Day race. I lost my shoe in a mud pit like 300 meters into this 5K and ended up finishing second, so I needed some redemption.
Yeah.
So I signed up for another race, won that, and I liked the feeling of winning. So I just started signing up for all these local races, my dad just supporting the mission. And I did a bunch of races. It was a blast. Worked out.
You and Pops pretty close still?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we don't see each other all the time because he lives in California still. But yeah, yeah, big fan of my dad. He's supported my career this whole time. He still supports me. So it's kind of his fault that I have the career that I do. So it's...
fault or praise to him?
Praise to him for sure. I guess fault is just a funny way to say that. But no, he can take a lot of credit for like the trajectory I've had and being able to support me through those first like foundational years before I was able to pay my own way to these races. He brought me to my first two world championships. Like he paid for all my race entries. He like helped me get on this road. So shout out
to Pops. One of the first things I was thinking about was, as a 14, 15 year old, how are you paying $100 a ticket and, you know, you can't even drive? Like, you know, OCR is not a cheap sport to get into right away. Like, well, you know, running in general is like, I feel like one of the cheaper sports. Like racing itself is not cheap.
Not for OCR. Yeah. Like you can sign up for a local 5K if you just want to test yourself for like $35.
Sure.
But if you just want to do a Spartan sprint, see what it's like you're pushing 150, you want to get in the elite wave, you're pushing almost $200 for registration. So
yeah, and you got to race a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You got to race, you know, maybe twice a month if you're serious about it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and but what's nice about the earlier days of Spartan races, when you podiumed in an event, you earned your registration for the next.
I remember that. I remember getting race codes.
Yeah.
And then, like, I left, and I feel like so much changed over the last couple years in Spartan. And it's, for me, I've always loved obstacle course racing because I don't have super high-end PR speed. But when you mix in, like, heavy carries and rigs and stuff like that, I tend to do a little bit better.
For sure.
And so I was like, this is really fun. I'm really interested in it. And then I just feel like the goalpost kept moving with the rules for like elite waves and that kind of stuff. So I feel like now some people are a little bit like in this middle ground where they love the sport of OCR, but it becomes a little bit cumbersome to keep up with all the rule changes.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like, the early days when the sport was growing and it was like one person kind of in charge of the sport, or a couple people that have been there since the beginning, it was really easy. But in the last few years, there's been such a turnover of employees and who's in charge. And I don't really blame Spartan all that much, especially like the people that work there, because each one of them is getting paid for one job and they have five. Mm. They're just way understaffed and overworked. So the rules keep changing, the qualification systems keep changing, the format keeps changing, so it's hard to stay in it when every year you're looking at something different. Like the qualification standards this year are way different than last year.
Right.
And the format's entirely different than it was last year or 2 years ago. Like everything's changing all the time, and it's a little frustrating. That's why a lot of athletes, I think, are looking at hybrid, and they're like, it makes sense.
Right.
It's easy to follow. It's easy to understand. And simplicity is good. So, yeah, it's a little frustrating, but OCR at its core is still an awesome sport, and the community is just incredible. So mm-hmm. looking at it from the outside, it's kind of a bummer, and it's a little frustrating at times. But as soon as you're at an event and you're around everybody and you get to do the race, it's like you forget about all those negative things and you just have a great time.
Totally. And I felt that like at my core when we were just in Saudi. It was like I felt the spirit of what OCR was, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like chock full of like the great athletes that we've raced against. And this was the first time they put on this event, obviously had a bunch more prize money, $80,000 on the line for first place. Mm-hmm. Everyone traveled to Saudi. Everyone was there ready to race, throw down. And it was like, oh yeah, this sport is sick. Like the reason we all did this is because the actual sport is sweet. And I've been doing hybrid racing a lot the last couple of years, but I actually prefer OCR, honestly. If it was apples to apples, the same people running both, and it was like, you can run outside and do obstacles and heavy carries and trail run in the mountains or the desert, or you can be in a gym and run on polished concrete, I'm picking the former every time. Like, I'm not going to pick to run inside over outside any day of the week. So it was cool to see, like, it is possible for it to have a total resurgence. As much as like some people may think it's falling off, like Saudi kind of opened my eyes to that.
I think a lot of people are going to be on a similar thought pattern to you. I think even some of the people that are really good at hybrid do still enjoy the outdoor aspect of racing and that style of training. I know that I lean towards it. I'm the same as you. Like if I can go trail run and spend my time in the mountains and running fast and dodging in and out of trees and just having a good time out there, that's what I'm gonna go for.
The sickest.
Yeah. And it kind of bums me out. Like I'm just starting to get to like the point where endurance really is taking a strong root in my career and like who I am as an athlete and my age. And I have another 10 years of being really, really good at this and mm-hmm. getting better long term over the trails and mountain running and that sort of skill set. So the fact that it's kind of like taking a hit with a lot of the athletes and just engagement and people buying into it, little sad to where I was even looking at like next year, I might have to transition. Like if I want to continue making a career out of being an athlete, I might have to go and look at Hyrox as like, that's my option right now. That's like the closest next step. Because I don't know if I would just want to, you know, drop 30 pounds and go run in the mountains to try to be good at that.
Mm-hmm.
I like the multifaceted competition. So,
yeah. And that's coming from the guy who just won the 3K world championship. So literally the world champion of Spartan is saying, I don't know if there's enough room here for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a strong message. And I don't know, hopefully these guys in Saudi like start balling out and put on a bunch of these races with some serious money. Cause it seems like from what I can tell, that region of the world is very interested in acquiring high-level sporting events, whether it's mm-hmm. golf, tennis, F1 racing, now obstacle course racing, trail running. It seems like they're ready to put all their eggs in that basket, maybe like the U.S. was in the 90s, like when we started embracing triathlon and all these different sports. So maybe just over the horizon, it'll start popping.
I got a good feeling. I met the organizers of the event, and you know, they had a couple shortcomings that they were aware of, and they want to improve upon that. And I'm excited to see what they come up with. And through the conversations that I've had, it's looking really good. It's looking like we're going to have a lot of cool things in the future. And they understand, like, the actual growth of the sport and what is going to help make OCR become something. So besides just having an event with a lot of participation, like actually creating content and establishing media around it so that people can actually watch it, right? Like you look at these sports that were already super popular, like golf or F1 or any of these things that Netflix made a series about, and suddenly the engagement from adjacent audiences is insane.
Yeah.
Like I went through it. You watched it. So we spent a week together in Dubai in a hotel room, and my foot was hurting the first few days, so I was trying not to move too much. So I just laid in bed and was watching Formula One on Netflix, and I knew nothing about this sport, and now I'm fully engaged to where I am keeping track of the results of the current season. I finished all six seasons of F1, and now I'm fully engaged in the sport because it was just exciting content that introduced me to something I wasn't aware of. So I hope we can see something along those lines on a smaller scale for OCR, but just an actual platform for people to get familiar with the sport and get familiar with the athletes.
Yeah, it's all about the storytelling, right? There's a lot of examples. I'm a big UFC nerd, and you know, I just love combat sports in general. And a couple years ago, like when we were growing up, you had WWE, which was fake wrestling, but they told all these stories. And then you had UFC, which is like people actually beating the hell out of each other with no stories. It was just like, this guy's like a farmer, this guy's like from the city, and they just like beat the hell out of each other. Now they have like deep, multifaceted stories. Like this guy, you know, they used to train at the same college when they were wrestlers, and some dude got kicked out because he was stealing stuff, and he has hated him in real life since that day. And now 10 years later, they're fighting for a championship. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is a real life story. You know, they're able to paint people as villains or really good people. And it's much more engaging to watch things when you have the story behind the athletes.
For sure.
It adds another layer to sport.
Yeah, that's the dream, man. That's a dream. Like, there's fascinating individuals in OCR. Like, we got to spend time with some of them. A lot of them, actually, from different countries, at Gov Games and at Tough Mudder. Like, there was a ton of very fascinating people. It wouldn't take much to tell their stories and get a lot of people interested. So I'd love to see it. I'd love to help some way. But currently, I'm just a poor boy in Colorado Springs. So at some point, we're going to get that break.
Yeah, I think so. So let's dive into the Gov Games thing a little bit, because you kind of teased it there.
Yeah.
For people that have never heard of Gov Games before, give them like a, you know, an offhanded quick description of what Gov Games is.
Gov Games is a six-person team extreme carnival game. Basically, team extreme carnival game with fitness. So we were representing Colorado. It was the Battle of the Cities, but we represented Colorado. We did a good job, though. And we had six people on the team, but only five could compete at any one time on all these challenges. We had seven different obstacle courses that had three obstacles on each thing, right? Yeah, and you were assigned points for completing each obstacle and bonuses for going fast. And we were going up against cities from all over the world. In our heat, we had, Lisbon, Moscow, and Copenhagen.
Yeah.
So that was just four of the teams of the 28 that we had. So it was exciting. And they build these things larger than life. They're huge obstacles made for teamwork, very innovative and creative. Stuff that we haven't seen before, but it was super exciting, and it actually required like teamwork and fitness, and it was fun. It was a blast, and I think like anyone that's done that event knows that it's different than anything else you've ever done, but it's memory making kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the one thing that I want to touch on there that you said is the production, which is unbelievable. Like, you see these rigs, they're 30 feet high, they've got complex mechanical systems, some of them have automatic, like, you know, sensors or triggers, trap doors, water spraying, industrial fans blowing you, like it's the craziest thing you could ever imagine. And it really feels like it's something that has to be done there. Like, I can't see any company in America taking it to that extreme. Like, how much do you think it costs to build the 7 rigs in Gov Games.
Millions.
Yeah, like literally millions for 7 structures.
It's wild, and they're all very professionally done. Everything's color coordinated to where you know where your lane is. And they're huge. They're taking Ninja Warrior and Wipeout size obstacles and making 4 lanes of them so teams can compete head to head.
Right.
So it's like, it's the size of what would be like a legitimate television production, yet originally the event was just designed for the people that work in the local government to be able to compete against each other in a fitness competition. Now it's expanded into battle of the communities and the cities and the juniors. So it's pretty wild, and I hope one day they maybe like make a TV show out of it, because it's incredible. It's so cool. It's so much fun to watch.
Yeah, it's really cool. And this year they had a really large emphasis, it seems like, on the media side. Like the live stream had live scoring this year, which I know a lot of people had a difficult time with last year. Mm-hmm. I thought the announcers were really fun and exciting. I wish we would have got a little bit more airtime of us. You know, they only show, each team only gets to be shown through one obstacle, because there's 28 teams and 7 obstacles. So, yeah, sadly, I was sitting out on that one, and I was like, dang it.
But, yeah, I get you. But even so, like, I think we only got shown for 10 seconds of our entire run. It was mostly focused on the other teams, even though we crushed that course. But whatever. Next year, we're coming back. We're going to win it all.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
We came up a little short. We had a great team, and I feel like our team worked well together. We had great plans. We executed well, even when we faced little mistakes. We just fell a little short. Mm-hmm. Had a little trouble out there. But overall, 99.5% of the day was perfect. And I think when it comes to the final event, our team is the best suited for whatever the finals are going to be, because they're usually 2 or 3 times as long as any of the individual obstacle courses, and there's a little more fitness involved.
Yeah.
And our team's just built for that.
Yeah. There was, I was watching that puzzle, which is like the first thing they had to do, and I was like, dang, we would be really solid at that. It's basically just running shuttle sprints for, what I don't know what it was, 9-10 minutes. And awesome. I'm like, our team is literally made for that.
Yeah.
So,
but I think one of the highlights for a lot of us was the buy-in event.
Right.
So we, as a 5-person team all tied together, had to climb the 160 floors of the service stairwell of the Burj Khalifa, the tallest building in the world.
Twice the size of the Empire State Building.
Twice.
It's 2 Empire State Buildings. Empire State Building's about 400 meters. Burj Khalifa is about 800 meters. It's half a mile into the sky.
Yeah, that one was painful. Yeah. It took us about 29 minutes.
29:05 or something. Yeah.
Insane.
And to get full points, you had to go sub 30. There was 4 of the 28 teams who were able to accomplish that.
Right.
And not without some hiccups. We had one guy, Ethan Brown, who, you know, around 100 was starting to feel it. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, you know, you're all tethered together. It's not like VJ's super fit, so VJ can run up the stairs. It's like, right, you all 5 basically have to hold this pace. And if you go too fast, you're going to pull the guy behind you. If you go too slow, you're going to pull back the guy in front of you. Mm. And so we basically all had to go the same pace. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. Ethan was probably still jet lagged at that point, because we all had been in Saudi Arabia, or Jack was in Rome. Absolutely. He flew over to America and, like, I don't know, 48 hours beforehand, and then climbed Burj Khalifa. Right. I'm like, he probably was set to be sleeping around that time.
Absolutely.
And was just battling. I mean,
yeah, who knows what his sleep was like the night before. He might not have slept at all. And we had him right in the middle of us. So 2 people in front, Ethan was in the middle, 2 people behind him. And about halfway up, like, he got in a dark place.
Yeah.
And
Shadow Realm.
Yeah, huge props to him, because the pain that you feel in, say, the last quarter mile of a 5K, if you're in a fight with somebody and you're pushing with everything you got, you're starting to see red. Like, he stayed in that place for 8 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And, you know, the team was helping him. I was trying to pull from the front. You and Rylan trying to push from the back, just to make sure we stayed on pace. And at no point, I think, did he ask to stop or stop trying to move. And he gave everything he had for what was probably the most painful experience of his life, but incredible for him to like put it out there for the team. And we still got the points. So
yeah, we got the points, made it with 55 seconds to spare. And yeah, it was one of the gutsiest performances I've ever seen in my life. I mean, he's like dry heaving. His eyes are closing. It's like you were saying, like that last kick of a 5K. It's like when you're running really hard in a speed workout and your form starts to break down and you're just kind of like starting to flail and do anything you can to get yourself to locomote forward.
Yeah.
But it was like for 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't just the end.
It was not pretty, but he put it out there for us. So shout out Ethan Brown.
Huge shout out.
Go check out that guy. He was clutch on many of the obstacles in Gov Games and sold his soul for our climb. So
yeah, shout got the bonus buzzer on the climbing one. Just the overall ninja, just a dog on obstacles.
Ninja Brown.
Ninja Brown. That's what we were calling him. I think that was one thing that suited our team well. And if you look at somebody like Copenhagen, who's won twice, for Gov Games, you need some people with different skill sets. Mm-hmm. If you all have the same skill set, there will be things that you run into that don't suit you well. And I think that was one thing that we did really well and allowed us to kind of like trade blows with Moscow and Copenhagen and the other top teams. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, it made us well-rounded for all the challenges. Any of the fitness stuff we really capitalized on did well. Those parkour guys from Moscow, they crushed a lot of the obstacle stuff that we kind of fell short on. But then, you know, we made up in some of the teamwork stuff, mm-hmm. I think, as well, above Moscow. So kind of offset everything, and we were in the mix for a long time. So felt good. I'm looking forward to next year. Counting us in. You're in, right?
I'm in.
Hell yeah. We'll be back.
And we're going to hopefully get another race through the desert on the books. That's what I think. If you get another big race like we had this year, mm-hmm. it makes it so much easier for everyone to justify that travel. Like if you're like, oh, I'm just going to Gov Games, it's like, it's kind of like a lottery ticket. Only 3 of the 28 teams get paid. But if you're like, I have that multiplied by a pretty decent chance to getting the money at this other OCR race or trail race, whatever it is, then it makes it a lot easier to justify that big expense.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we are. I think we're going to see that because that's kind of the season for racing out there. They don't want to race in the summer because it's just super hot. So they're looking at like that December through March time frame, December through April. That's like really good for racing there. So I'd expect in the future, like they're getting more successful. This was kind of a proof of concept for them. Mm-hmm. So I'd say we're looking at like 2 to 3 races across that time frame that are going to be major, major events in the OCR world. So I'm excited to see what they put together and count me in. I'll be there.
And it's nice too for us. I mean, because that's like midwinter. So we're sitting here and like we get a chance to go thaw out for a while in the desert and mm-hmm. run fast versus like just slogging through either mud or snow all winter. It's like, yeah, give me a couple weeks in the desert. I'm down.
Be fun.
No problem.
For sure.
And Alula, I thought, was a really cool spot. Like it was not, I personally prefer Alula, like the vibe there, to Dubai. Like I like that old archaeological site, like mm-hmm. rich with, you know, stories from ancient texts and, you know, just massive land swaths untouched by humans. I think that's a really cool vibe. But
as long as food and water are readily accessible, I'm 100% on board with you. I enjoyed Alula and going to like those old markets and like Sick. Old town and stuff. That was super, super fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what it looks like when we go back next year.
Yeah, they got to add in some of the slick rock running, though.
I think they got a lot of feedback. They're going to try to, you know, get more on some of the terrain out there because I think that was a huge feedback from most of the athletes there. It's like we're surrounded by this really, really cool,
breathtaking
environment. We just want to get in that a little more. So I think every event that they do is going to be better than the last because they're actually listening and taking the feedback from the people that participate. So
yeah, they were that's seeking really cool. it. They were asking. They're like, how is this? How is that? How is that? Mm-hmm. Like midday on day two that, you know, Duncan asking me questions. What's this like? What's that like? I'm like, oh, this is, he actually wants to know.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. They want to put on the best events in OCR and I applaud that. They're not like trying to make a minimum viable product. They're trying to make the best product they can.
Mm-hmm.
So respect.
Yeah, I think it could be really sick. If anyone's never seen what Alula looks like, it's very similar to like Southern Utah, like just massive red rock,
mm-hmm.
like trenches with these really narrow gaps that come out.
It's a Middle Eastern Moab.
Middle Eastern Moab. It kind of looks like arches. There was one spot where we did get to come through those rocks,
mm-hmm.
and that was always like a highlight, you know, at least for me.
It looked like Tatooine.
Yeah,
right there, going
yeah.
through the rocks there. It was super cool.
And I will say it was a good mix. I was glad that it wasn't all deep sand. Like there were some deep sand bits, and then you get like to like the 4K, 5K mark,
mm-hmm.
and then that like second half of the loop, people were dropping fast times. Like
yeah,
you saw
yeah.
people scooting like 6:30, just cranking downhill on some hard pack. So mm-hmm. it was a good mix.
Yeah, had a blast out there. Looking forward to getting a little redemption in the desert.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I was like, you know, so many of us got 8 laps, and
yeah.
like for me, I didn't have a great day, so I felt like 9 laps was like, I didn't even have to have a good day to have 9 laps. I had to have like a okay day to have 9 laps, and 9 laps would have put me in like 7th. And I'm like, that would have been,
yeah, we gotta get your stomach handled, man. I don't know what happened to you there.
That was my fault, honestly. It's like, yeah, I think I just didn't test out that food system with that long of an effort. I had been using that food system on shorter efforts, and I had done similar things in the past, but I had never gone just fully dependent on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically was eating all my calories twice because they were just throwing up in my mouth and swallowing it. It was pretty gross.
That's tough. That's real tough. I was getting desperate out there, man. Like towards the back half is my longest day ever. Never ran that much. I was still feeling decent. I didn't really start cramping or really slowing down till that very last lap where we uh-huh. had to do the double. And I was just, I reached a little bit of muscular fatigue doing a little extra work in the middle. So it was tough, but I was like drinking Coca-Colas and going wild out there, eating stuff that I'd never eaten. Just like pounding Nutella sandwiches and drinking Coca-Cola and then just like heading back out, whatever I could do. But yeah, first ultra in the books. Not like a real ultra, but kind of.
Dude, you say that, but if you break it down, it's a real ultra. So for people that don't know, this Alula race was put on by Tough Mudder. It's an infinity loop, so you have to run
a 10K loop
as many times as you can over an 8-hour span. You could run as a single, a team of two, or a team of four. And you were on the team of four, and so you kind of alternate laps. You don't have to go out every lap. Two guys can go, and then the other two guys, and you can kind of split it.
Yep.
But if you take your time, 8 hours or so, and you ran 60K, right? If you apply that to a normal American at a 60K race, it might take them 8 hours. They call that an ultra. You ran an ultra. In my book.
I'll take it.
You ran fast and then you chilled, but that's just the strategy you did in your ultra.
Yeah, so I would just book it to the next aid station and
yeah.
chill out.
And
take
then
a
you,
nap.
You just took long aids.
Boom.
AIDS. That sounded weird.
Yeah.
You took a long time at the aid station.
Yeah. I don't want to take AIDS.
Oh. Yeah, it was fun, but no, I really enjoyed the Alula experience. What's next for VJ Jones? What do you got coming on race-wise?
There's a lot of things going around. Plans are continuously changing. I thought I had a rock-solid road forward this year. Like, I am going to just blast through this summer's training, get really, really fit, try to be fitter than ever, and then smash through all the races in the fall and winter, win all the championships and do that sort of thing. But a lot of things going on. Like, there's a potential for some media projects that I'm looking at. There's some potential for a television show that I didn't know was getting put together. But apparently I'm a kind of a higher tier pick to be on a television show. So that's kind of cool.
Mm.
There's a couple local races that I really wanted to do. Like, I'm looking at a road race in Boulder. I'm looking at doing the Bar Mountain race. So there's a lot of options. My training is going to kind of stay the same. Like, I'm going to try to be really, really fast on foot. Like, running's the main focus this year, but I want to maintain a lot of the strength that I've built, but bring the weight down a little bit.
Yeah.
The boy's a little chunky for running real fast. So we're losing weight and running faster. And that's the main goal. So yeah, I got a lot of, a lot of prospects this year. I'm not exactly sure what the middle of my year is going to look like, but come September time, we're full maniacal focus on winning every championship that I can.
And when you say every championship, you're talking mostly about Spartan.
I'm talking about OCR.
OCR.
As a whole.
Yeah.
So we're looking Spartan Pan American Championships, Spartan Trifecta World Championships, Spartan Short Course World Championships, Spartan World Championships, OCR World Championships. I'm considering the FISO World Championships. I don't know exactly where that is. It's like Costa Rica or Puerto Rico or
something like that. Down there. Yeah.
Something with two words. Yeah. So anything that has championship after it and it involves OCR, I'm trying to be there and I'm trying to win. I feel like the last couple of years were a little bit of a disappointment for me. I've still walked away with a world title of some kind every year, but I feel like the year as a whole wasn't really successful since I dealt with some of my parasite issues from down south. So now that I'm finally feeling over that entirely, like last year, I think I averaged 25 miles a week.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy for how dedicated you are to running. Like 25 miles a week is much less volume than I
would
expect.
That's like recreational, somebody after work type stuff.
Right.
And I just, that's all I could handle. Every time I would push over that, I would start getting sick or I would just burn out and get super lethargic. I just couldn't handle anything. So I had to put a big like push in on dialing in my nutrition, dialing in my immune system, making sure everything was working. And it just took a lot more time than I thought. Like I thought I was over it at the beginning of last year. And just last year I was never able to really support training a decent amount of volume. And for the first like couple months of this year, I was able to average like 35 to 40 miles and I was feeling pretty good. It was sustainable. So I'm like, the goal is to try to get back up into like that 50 to 60 range.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll actually be really competitive running again. But I just wasn't able to run volume to try to be fast in the last year or so. So I'm excited to actually progress this year.
When you're talking about like 25 mile weeks, are most of those like you're running pretty hard, I'm assuming, just given that?
No. I was mostly like pretty low aerobic.
Really?
Chill with an intensity session or two during the week. But I just couldn't get like a lot of volume on the weekends or support getting my easy runs above like a 45 to 50 minute like easy run.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I started pushing into like trying to do 9 or 10 mile easy runs and recovery runs and that sort of thing, it's just like it started catching up to me really quickly. And last year I was doing a ton of hybrid training too, so there was a lot more volume in the gym. So you know, lifting twice a week, but also having like a hybrid day and then every strength session finishing with some kind of Metcon. Like my volume was decently high. I just couldn't support actually running at all on top of that, which I normally could. So now that I'm actually like doing my strength sessions, doing my cross training and getting 35, 40 miles a week, like that's a big win right now.
Yeah.
So we'll probably end up backing off a little bit on some of the cross training stuff. Just trying to sacrifice that to make sure we get good running volume this year.
Yeah.
Cause, I have like one pretty major goal that I want to accomplish and that's Trifecta World Champs. And the biggest threat to that is probably the fastest runner we've ever seen in this space. So, I'm going to need some foot speed to take him down.
Talk to us a little bit about Trifecta World Champs and about Mr. Basilico.
So for those that don't know, Spartan Trifecta Champs is a 3-day race weekend where you do three of like the core Spartan race distances. The sprint, which is a 5K, the super, that's a 10K, and the beast, that is a half marathon or 21K. So first day sprint, second day super, third day beast. And each of those days you're racing against the field and it's a cumulative time event. To where the first 2 days they add up your time, and on the third day, depending on how far ahead or behind you are to your competitors, they send people off at your designated time. So if you have the fastest time over the first 2 days, say you finish the sprint and the super 25 seconds faster than whoever's in second place, you get to start 25 seconds ahead of whoever's behind you. So whoever crosses the finish line first wins. but it's a lot of racing over 3 days, and it's a lot of fast running.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of those first 2 days are actually through the city in Greece, through Sparty, which is pretty cool and exciting, and in a riverbed there. And then for the beast, you go off into the hills, and you start climbing and hitting a lot of different obstacles out there. But it's a super competitive event, and from what I've heard, everyone loves that event more than anything else in the championship realm that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks that that should be the Spartan World Championships. It shouldn't be like the Spartan Beast Championship and all these other things. It should just be trifecta. Like, that's the one.
Yeah.
So no American male has ever won it. I'm a little disappointed. So I feel like it's my responsibility to go out there and give it a real shot.
Has Adkins won it?
No.
Really?
Adkins just can't seem to perform to his ability there for some reason. Something always seems to get in his way.
Gotcha.
Which is interesting. Because
it seems like he'd be solid. Like, he'd start, you know, a minute or two back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have that third day where everyone's, like, volume is kind of beating them down a little bit, and he's, like, just getting into his rhythm.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like it would suit him.
I would think so, too. Just, like, the first year he did it, I think he kept missing the spear throw, so he just wasn't able to capitalize there. In this last year, he was coming off an injury, so there's always something going on there. But I expect him, if he comes back this year, he's going to be a threat.
Yeah.
But I know how Atkins races. I know how he runs. I feel like I can handle him. The only guy that's intimidating is this guy Basilico.
Yeah.
This French athlete who is kind of a world-class runner outside of OCR. Like, this dude is fast, like, legitimately fast. And if you saw him out there on course at all in Alula,
yeah,
the dude was ripping.
He can move.
It's crazy. So the only thing that seems to stop him is when obstacles get wet, he doesn't have enough strength to kind of handle the difficulties that come along with that. So those are the years that he's lost this race. But when it's dry and there's good grip, nothing gets in his way. So I feel like my skill set lends myself to be able to get close to matching his run speed. So that's my goal this year. Like, I need to be the best runner that I've ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that'll lend itself well to every other event that I'm doing, but also what would have to be my strategy if I was going to compete in High Rocks or something like that. Like, I'm going to have to elevate my run game super, super high.
Yeah.
Because when the stations beat me down, that's when I'm going to, like, find what my true High Rocks pace would be. And for OCR, like, compromise running isn't a thing. I recover on obstacles. No obstacle compromises me and makes me run slower. Like, I almost run the same pace that I would race a 5K is what I would run, like, a Spartan sprint in. Like, I run that same pace the whole time. If anything, I might even go a little faster because I can catch up on obstacles. Like, I can catch my breath, get a free 10-second break if I'm going across a multi-rig.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different approach. So yeah, just, like, real focus on running this year. I want to get some good stats. I want to run a good 5K. I want to see what I'm capable of.
So yeah.
Running.
I think if you, you know, tune up your running even more so than it already is, you have a great chance just because your obstacle proficiency is the best. Like, I
appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I've seen, like, you even if Basilico's quicker than you on the flats, he's not going to out rig you. Like, you're gonna move through rigs, walls way faster than he is. So, you know, you just got to get to the point where, like, even if he runs away from you a little bit at spots, like, your prowess as an obstacle racer still beats him. So
yeah, when it comes to the obstacle racing part of the obstacle race, I'm good. I got that handled.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like how I was able to fake my way through the 3K champs the last couple of years, like, mm-hmm. not being fit, like, definitely not the fittest person there, but the obstacles just kept me in the game.
Yeah, and they're super important at a distance like 3K, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely. Like, just way higher volume compared to the running mileage.
Yeah, so I feel good about the obstacles. It's just kind of ingrained in me. I grew up doing this, so I just have that skill set unlock a little bit of tune-up here and there, and I'm fine to go. So the main focus is on fitness. Like, I feel like fitness has been the problem because I just can't maintain the training volume I've wanted. But now that your boy is healthy,
yeah,
it's looking good, and I'm feeling good about it.
We'll get some long mountain runs in once you're feeling good and your knee feels good.
I'm looking forward to it. I want to run out, like, do a big day running out, camp overnight,
yeah,
forage off the land.
Forage off the land.
And then run back.
That's it.
That sounds like an adventure.
That's what life is all about right there.
Okay. Now, I grew up in Southern California with, like, everything I need around me. You know, if I got hungry, I'd go to the store. Never foraged. I'm not a forager, but I'm willing to take this on with proper guidance.
Yeah. And the other thing about the mountains is just getting used to being hungry. You know, that's like one of the big things about like multi-day mountain running is like realizing that your body can go off a lot less than maybe you thought it could.
Okay.
So that sounds scary to you, doesn't it?
Well, you know, I fought for a long time not to drop weight. So I was just eating as much as I could for a long time. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting out there, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm open to new experiences.
Yeah. We'll go catch some fish with our hands or something.
I want to do that.
Yeah.
Definitely do. Tickle the fish.
You tickle them?
Tickle them. Snag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a little bit of Native American in my blood.
Dude, that means you can do it automatically.
I feel like that's how that works. It. Like, I'm going to get out there.
You have your card.
I'm going to do a little rain dance. We're going to get a little rainstorm. It's going to be sweet.
Yeah, I think that is exactly how it works. Tell me about this as much as you can, what you're hearing about this TV show, because you said something about a TV show and then you just kind of dropped it.
Oh, yeah. So there's, I think it's called like The Tough House or something like
that. The Tough House.
Like, Mabby Davis posted about it. I put something up on Hybrid Fitness Media there. I think they're trying to make like a reality show, right? Where they're going to bring a bunch of athletes together and then there's going to be like different competitions. But since it's called The Tough House, I'm guessing they're trying to do like a Big Brother thing or like a Love Island thing where it's like Fit Island. And it's going to be kind of like a team thing. So you can like team up with people. I actually don't really know anything about it. All I know is that I emailed a producer and they emailed me back and they want me to fill out a questionnaire. I know some other athletes are interested in it, like similar athletes to myself and in the hybrid space are talking about it, but nobody seems to really know entirely what's going on yet. But yeah, so that was not in my plans at all, but I might be away from home for a few weeks doing Fit Island or something like that. So we'll see. Yeah, I don't know anything, but I'll let you know. It could be fun.
Yeah, I only heard, you know, bits and pieces of what you're saying about it on Sunday, but it sounds like basically a lot of people who are, you know, in our realm are kind of talking about some kind of mysterious show that no one seems to know about.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're going to see a lot of familiar faces there because I think we kind of fit the bill on what they're kind of looking for is athletes that are just kind of jacks of all trades and are kind of elite athletes in their field. So I'm kind of good at obstacle racing, so I can kind of represent that realm a little bit.
It almost is giving me like the Spartan Game vibes, or you know how they were like kind of trying to make that into a TV show. It feels like it didn't quite get there.
It's just they kind of dropped the ball the second year. Like the first year was incredible. I think we were all really engaged in that, and it looked awesome. The second year, I don't know. It was like they tried to put it together last minute. They're like, oh, we already have this event going on. Let's make a couple athletes stay behind and put this thing on. And it just was kind of a shit show entirely. But something like that works. Like, sure. It seems like there's been a lot of things that have almost hit the mark and they just fall short on something. So if these guys can just capitalize, but they're going to make drama, you know, they're going to try to start beef between people and everyone's going to be mic'd up. And so it's going to be sitting in the cushions over here. They're going to be like, geez, I really don't like the way that VJ, you know, handles himself after a workout. Like he really seems too cocky. And then people are going to be like, yeah. Like, fuck that guy.
So like, damn, Ryan smells bad.
So we're going to see a lot of that, which I'm interested to see how like OCR people handle the drama because I don't think they do a good job with it a lot of times in our sport. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I hope there's just if it's another thing to give athletes a platform to build themselves on a little bit, I'm all for it. So I'm in. I feel like my character kind of fits a little well into that kind of scene. Yeah. I can do okay on camera. So I'm looking forward to it. Should be fun.
I think you're funny sometimes.
I appreciate.
No, I think you do great. You're definitely, you're a natural when it comes to, like, you know, thinking on your feet. Like, you can pop off. Like, somebody jumps in front of you with the camera. Like, you don't need, like, give me a second to, like, think about what I'm saying. You're just going to let it flow and just say whatever comes out. Like, I got a lot of responses when I pulled my camera out when we were playing the simulated shooting game. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about how you want a scope on your gun so that you can see little kids suffer.
Yeah.
A lot of people like that one.
Yeah. Theo Vaughn's kind of my hero.
Okay.
So I'd love to, I'm trying to, I don't want to think quickly. You know, he just perceives things differently than normal human beings. So I try to have a different perspective on stuff and just be ready to spit out whatever's on your mind. I think people like try to filter themselves a little too much and they get in their own way.
Yeah.
Just say what's on your mind.
Yeah, Theo Vaughn might be the best at it.
I mean, absolutely.
He's so fast and he's so different. It's mm-hmm. Everything is so different.
Like, you wouldn't expect it. Like, a lot of people, like, I feel like I have a, I can state the obvious, the stuff that's already there.
Yeah.
But he'll say something that you would have never considered, and he got there before you even thought about saying anything. So.
But I think incredible. He puts in reps. Like, I think you have to practice that. Like, I don't think you just, like, one day wake up and you're the best at it. I think he had, like, an inclination to it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, now he just, like, takes in those callers. Like, the callers will say something stupid, and he just riffs. And he just does, like, 45 seconds of the craziest things he can think of based on what Larry the Cable Guy said about his wife or something.
I want to start doing animated training stories.
Oh, that'd be cool. He has his like little, the Sunday cartoons?
Yes.
That'd be sick.
That'd be dope. We should do that. We should have a little, you should get your own little Sunday cartoons on here.
Okay.
That'd be sweet.
I'll let my people know. I'll have them contact you.
Yeah,
people.
Yeah, your assistant.
Yeah, yes, my assistant.
There you go.
Well, I appreciate you coming out, and I think it's going to be really cool to see, no matter what you do, whether it's the TV show, racing this year, all the above, it'd be cool to follow along. And just appreciate you coming on here with me.
Yeah, dude, it's an honor of a lifetime. I'm excited to finally visit the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do this again, but for now, we got some mileage to get in today.
We got some mileage, so we're gonna go for a run. See you guys later. Stay wild.